You're now entering a world where the world's greatest audience builders don't hide their secrets. This is How I Built My Audience with Blake Immel.
For people who aren't familiar with ASCII art, it's when you take letters, characters, punctuation marks, stuff like that, and you make art out of it. So if you've seen like the bunny holding the little sign and you write something in the sign, that's ASCII art. Unfortunately, it's not accessible for screen readers because the screen reader can't determine, oh, these marks are making a big picture, instead of I need to read the marks as their originally purpose.
Today, we're here with Alexa Heinrich, but I'm going to call her Alex. Alexa is more professional, but I don't want to wake up the Alexa over here. So I'm sure it's probably been a rough life for you.
Last 5 years, yeah. Amazon just ruining my life.
Do you own any of those devices or do you use Google?
I do not own any of those devices. It's funny because my cat's name is actually Seraph. And if I say her name too fast, my iPhone will be like, can I help you? I was like, Gosh, I'm surrounded.
Oh, man. We won't go into that too much because I'm sure you get the Alexa thing way too much. Just like I get the Balake joke all the time. I'm sure you've seen that. Yeah. Let's just chat about the goal of this podcast really quickly, because this one is going to be really informative in a different way. Maybe not so much step by step, but more so opening our minds to what we don't maybe consider very often, which is accessibility. So my goal for this podcast is to help the creators that are listening in understand the importance and also the how-to of creating accessible content and being more inclusive online. Does that sound like a plan to you?
Yeah, it sounds great.
All right, let's dive right in. I would love to start more at the foundation here. So this is called How I Built My Audience. So we definitely want to talk about that too. And I'm guessing Twitter is probably the biggest place for you. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a big Twitter user, and that's a big reason that I've built my following, and that's where I have the biggest following is on Twitter. So I'm a big lover of Twitter.
And how did you make that decision? Were you considering doing like everything, the Gary Vee approach, or did you always want to keep focus on one thing and make sure you did that?
I think I've always just really enjoyed the way that Twitter works, honestly, just how the timeline works. I used to be a big hockey fan, and there's a lot of hockey fans on Twitter. And I don't know, hockey games are already really fast, but then when you're like on Twitter watching a hockey game with all the other hockey fans, everything moves even faster and it's really exciting. So I'm really familiar with Twitter. And when I started talking about digital accessibility, it's one of the easiest platforms to actually network on and promote what you're doing. Obviously, LinkedIn is made for networking, but Twitter feels more of a community. It's just easier to talk to people. People feel more accessible there. So yeah, I just started talking about it and I haven't stopped. So I really love Twitter. I do post stuff on LinkedIn and Instagram, but I definitely have more of a following on Twitter.
I'm really interested to know from your perspective, just like technically speaking, if Twitter is actually one of the more technically accessible platforms versus some of the others, like, or if there is another one. So like LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, for people with accessibility needs, what's the platform that actually does it the best?
So I personally don't rely on assistive technology, so I don't use it in my day-to-day life. But I will say that of the major platforms, so LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter makes the biggest effort, and they're very transparent about that effort. And it's more of a recent thing just because we all know what happened with audio tweets when Twitter kind of released that beta test last summer. And there was a lot of backlash because it wasn't accessible and they realized we need to fix this. And it wasn't just a audio tweets isn't accessible. It's a we need to prioritize accessibility. And they've been very transparent about that since that happened. So they've really built up their teams around accessibility. They talk about it more. They prioritize it more. And I just think it's really impressive because you don't see that from the other platforms too much. So yeah, Twitter to me is definitely one of the more accessible platforms. And the point being, when they released Fleets is the only story feature across any platform that has alt text capabilities. So you can make it accessible for people who are blind or visually impaired. Yeah, that is crazy.
That's crazy to me.
They're the last platform to jump on the stories train.
How long have Instagram stories even been on there? Like, it's been 5 years maybe or more?
Well, even like Snapchat, I think, was the first platform that had stories, and then Instagram and then Facebook and LinkedIn. And now I guess Spotify has it.
Why not?
But yeah, I know. Why not? But yeah, so Twitter really was the last one to do it, but they wanted to do it right. And I thought it was really impressive because I feel like the easier part to tackle with that would be captioning, but they're like, no, we're going to tackle the harder part first. Mm-hmm. And they did alt text. So I was really excited about that. Yeah. So Twitter definitely makes the biggest effort.
That's super interesting. Taking it a step back then from the platform level, just for you, how did this all start? Why did you start? How did you become impassioned about accessibility? What was there any particular thing or person or just anything that really sparked it and made it have such momentum in your life?
When I worked in, so I'm actually from Chicago. I live and work in Florida now, but I'm from Chicago. And when I was working in Chicago, I oversaw the web assets and mostly the social media for an institution that had 7 colleges in it. And one day the digital strategist that I worked with asked me, hey, are you putting alt text on the websiders on our website? And I had no idea what she was talking about. This is probably about 4 years ago, if I had to guess. And she had to explain it was. And I was horrified that I didn't know what that was. And then I started doing more research and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm missing so many things with our social media. There are things I should be doing. And I just fell down this rabbit hole of research and learning about screen readers and text-to-speech programs and how people who are blind or visually impaired interact with social media, how people who are deaf or hard of hearing interact with social media. And I just felt like more people needed to know about that because I had never heard anything about it. It's not something that I have an art degree, so it wouldn't have been necessarily in my degree, but I don't think it's something that a lot of my friends who did go through marketing programs learn about. You hear about it with web dev, but not really marketing, at least not for social media. I started talking about it more because I wanted more people to know about it. And again, I just haven't stopped talking about it.
It seems to be a really good niche for you. You're growing on Twitter and a lot of people know you as one of the accessibility people. There are a couple people out there that talk a lot about it, but you're definitely one of the people for this. And to be known as the anything is really kind of special on social because there's so much noise. So it seems to be a kind of a good corner for you to be in. For a platform like this, like a podcast, for example, or a YouTube channel, what are things that can be done for that? Let's just use this podcast right now as the use case. What can I do to make this very episode more accessible to more people?
Captioning is definitely one of those things that you can do. People always kind of get a little nervous when captioning is suggested because it feels like this monumental task. And I always encourage people that YouTube is great for captioning, actually. If you upload a video to YouTube as unlisted, it will try to auto caption your video for you. So if you give it a little bit of time, and then you can go in and you can edit those captions for accuracy. So that's a really easy way to get started with captioning. There's lots of services out there that do it. I use an app on my phone called Mixed Captions that kind of does the same thing as YouTube, where I can edit the captions after it gives its best shot. Captioning is a big deal with podcasts. There might be a visual aspect to it. Some podcasts do have visuals, some don't. But having just like a brief description in your description of the podcast, essentially of what those two people look like, what's going on in the podcast, is great. Just like set the stage for someone who's trying to mentally picture what's going on in this podcast. So those are pretty easy things to do. I try to speak pretty clearly when I'm on a podcast, which is not always the easiest because I get nervous, but I know it makes the captioning deal a lot easier if I speak clearly and slowly, which is hard for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I've always done transcriptions for my podcasts. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I'm really focusing on the video aspect as well. So adding in the captions is a whole other element. And if there's anybody looking for a great tool for this, by the way, I use Descript. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's a fantastic tool. I love it. So that's also can make this really accessible for a lot of people. And then diving even deeper than that. So outside of the podcast, there's so many different things that we can be doing that most people aren't, myself included. I feel so guilty. I need to be better at all this stuff, but I would love to just go through specific instances of different things, of how we can make content more accessible. So you talk about things like camel case hashtags. You talk about emojis. We should try to be a little bit sparse with our emojis. We talked about closed captioning and alt text, ASCII art. Is that how you say it though?
I've heard people call it ASCII art. So I think that's how it's supposed to be.
ASCII.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually interesting because I got curious. I was like, wait, how does my screen reader say ASCII art? Does it say ASCII art? And it says ASCII art because it's popular enough where a screen reader knows.
Okay.
So yeah, so for people who aren't familiar with ASCII art, it's when you take letters, characters, punctuation marks, stuff like that, and you make art out of it. So if you've seen like the bunny holding the little sign and you write something in the sign, that's ASCII art. Unfortunately, it's not accessible for screen readers because the screen reader can't determine, oh, these marks are making a big picture, instead of I need to read the marks as they're originally purposed.
It would read 49 exclamation points. It would go exclamation point, exclamation point. Yeah.
And even with that, there are some marks that a screen reader doesn't read aloud because they're so common. Whereas if you have a curly bracket, it's going to say like left brace or something because it's not a common mark. So it's very interesting the more you like dive into it. But you mentioned alt text earlier. That's basically designating a description for your image. So someone who is using a screen reader because they're blind or visually impaired can enjoy that image as well. Emojis, people love emojis. You got to use them in moderation. You got to throw them at the ends of posts and tweets because they all have descriptions assigned to them that most people don't realize are there. Screen readers use them to describe them to users. So it's, yeah, there's a lot you can do. And then of course, camel case, which is the one that everyone loves for whatever reason, because it's just funny, is capitalizing all the words in your multi-word hashtags. Otherwise, a screen reader tries to read it as one like giant word.
Got it. Okay. So a lot of it is on the screen reader side to make it accessible there. That's mm-hmm. And then what about things like memes and GIFs or GIFs, depending if you're the type of person that says GIF, I won't judge, but what about those? Like, how can you, is there anything that you can do about the more interactive the content's getting, whether it's to a meme, to a GIF, to an actual video? Because an image, you can describe it, but then you start adding more and more elements on top of it, and it's mm-hmm. just adding more to the story. So I'm curious if you have strategy or thoughts on that.
So with memes, it depends on how involved the meme is. You can add alt text to it. GIFs, GIFs.
That's all good.
If you use the web version of Twitter or the mobile version of Twitter, you can add alt text to GIFs, which is really nice. So they did adjust that. But I actually just joked the other day that it would be a really interesting exercise to do it in reverse of I write out a tweet that just says alt text and then describe the GIF, because there are so many GIFs out there that are like super popular with people. It'd be interesting to see if people could find the GIF that I'm describing, because that is definitely a very creative exercise of writing alt text for GIFs, because I laugh every single time I do it, because it's just very strange. Like when you're writing for, I did Anne Hathaway in a cream colored dress raising a glass of champagne and there's a sparkle or something, and people knew what I was talking about because everyone's seen that GIF. Mm. But yeah, it's a very creative exercise. But again, it depends on your content if you can add alt text or not.
I want to go a little bit further in the alt text as well and best practices for actually writing that out. I have a background in SEO, and so I always learned coming up in the industry that you try to explain it as exactly as possible. So you try to eliminate ambiguity and just say like an image of a man in a red shirt holding an umbrella, or trying to be as specific as possible. But is that actually best practice, and how in depth should you go, and how long should they be?
So you want to keep your alt text concise to a certain degree. I've had people tell me, I've read articles before, that some screen readers actually cut your alt text off after 125 characters. Mm-hmm. So I'm hyper wary of that. I don't know which screen readers those are, but it made me paranoid. But I still try to keep it short, just because you want your user to keep moving along through your content and you don't want to bog them down and get stuck on this image, I don't feel the need to describe every single detail in a picture. I try to pick out the most important details and describe those so that you can still visualize the important parts of your picture in context with the rest of your content. I'm okay with including proper names, proper nouns. An example I like to use is that when Elizabeth Warren was running for president, that's what her team did. They used her name and her title because it's her campaign and her social media, so why wouldn't you? And then as far as SEO goes, there's not a lot of research to support that SEO for alt text on social media images actually does anything. To my knowledge, it doesn't. So I always tell people, if you can get your keywords in there, great, but do it logically. Work it into the description like you would any other word. There's a trend on Instagram right now where people will write their image description. So they'll write their alt text and then it's like packing keywords, just like all these different keywords after that they couldn't fit into the alt text. And you should absolutely not do that, because it's not adding to the actual alt text. You are simply doing that for SEO purposes. And alt text is meant to be an accessibility tool, not an SEO growth hack. Right. So you want to, it's all about valuing your audience and their experience and prioritizing that over SEO or capitalism or anything like that. So accessibility is telling your audience, I care about you and your experience online.
Yeah. And I'm really hands-on as a learner, so I'd be curious. I've never gone through Instagram, for example, a very visual platform, and used it like without the normal functionality that I'm used to. If I were going through Instagram and I were someone who was blind or had visual impairment, what would that experience actually be? Have you experimented with that and tried to look at what other people experience basically based on different accessibility needs?
I have. I test content all the time. If I get curious about an image, I'll turn my screen reader on just to test it out. So if for those who aren't familiar, your mobile phone should actually have a screen reader built into it. So I have an iPhone, so it's called VoiceOver. Android devices have TalkBack. So you can use a screen reader if you have a smartphone, essentially. But I do a lot of content testing, and I test out images on Instagram. I test tweets. I have a private Twitter account where I just throw content in there just simply for testing it. Mm-hmm. I test stuff on Facebook. But scrolling through Instagram is interesting just because it's hit or miss if the alt text feature on Instagram works. Sometimes it works on my images, sometimes it doesn't. So I'm actually considering switching to just writing my image description in the caption and not putting it in the alt text, because it makes me nervous that my alt text doesn't seem to always work. Mm. So it's an interesting situation. But it's alt text. When you start writing alt text for your images, it definitely makes you pick more meaningful images. It makes you more conscious about the images that you choose, because if you're choosing images frequently that have flattened text on them, you have to put that in your alt text, and that's a huge pain. So I prefer not to use images like that when I do my social media content.
I just had this thought or this question on Instagram itself. When you were scrolling through and you are visually impaired, so you have the settings on where the screen reader will take over, will Instagram actually still serve images to those people that don't have alt text? Or is Instagram or other platforms, are they smart enough to know, okay, so the screen reader functionality is on, so we're not going to show any images that don't have that capability?
It will still serve those images, mostly because Facebook, and by extension, Facebook products, which Instagram is owned by Facebook, has an AI system that tries its best to write its own alt text, but it's exceptionally vague alt text. So it'll be like tree, person, outside, beach. Those are more like alt tags, which are super short. If you have an image of pancakes, an alt tag is pancakes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really describe anything. So Instagram will still serve up those images because it's AI is going to try and do its own alt text and it's going to be terrible. But in no instance, I think, would any Facebook product ever be like, we're going to stop serving up all these images just because someone has their screen reader on. That just goes against everything that Facebook and Facebook products want to do. It'd be nice if it did that.
Yeah, it just like it would make sense. Serve the best possible experience to people. But I guess, yeah, but what you're saying is also true that Facebook doesn't, they're putting their content first. They're not necessarily always putting us first. So that's a general theme with Facebook nowadays. But it, this has all been really informative for me. And I'm sure that there are a lot of questions that are going to rise up. So if later on in the YouTube comments or whatever, if I have more questions, I might come to you and ask more. But I think that this is a really important step for a lot of us because myself, I know I'm guilty of this and many of us listening that we just don't haven't educated ourselves on accessibility because for a lot of people, maybe we feel that it doesn't impact us, but in reality, it impacts everybody in some way. And we need to be more empathetic towards people that we don't understand exactly what it's like to have to use a screen reader, but we should optimize for that because everybody deserves the same chance to enjoy content, to have ideas, to spark their imagination, to consume just like we do. And I think it's an important conversation to have. So I'm really thankful that you came on and set the groundwork, but there's clearly a lot more to go.
Of course. And I always try to emphasize to people that we talk about accessibility and disability, but it's not just people who are permanently blind or permanently deaf. There are people who have temporary disabilities. There are people who have situational disabilities. So it affects your entire audience. And it just makes you a better human to implement these best practices with your social media and try to be better about it. But yeah, if you ever have any other questions, you know where to find me. And I'm slowly putting together my digital marketing hub of here are the resources you need to have if you want to be a more accessible social media presence.
Yeah, I was just on your website actually and looking at the checklist and that was super helpful already. So maybe if you want to talk about that really quickly, promote anything else that you're working on, where you're at in your life right now, where you want to go. If you anything you want to promote or chat about here, the stage is yours as we close out.
Sure. So I have a website, which is basically my digital portfolio. It's therealalexa.com, which yes, is throwing shade at Amazon. But I have been trying to put together a kind of a resource hub where people can learn about alt text, they can learn about captioning, they can learn about how to use emojis, Unicode characters, ASCII art, hashtags, all that stuff for social media in an accessible way. So it's a labor of love. I am not a website designer and I get distracted really easily. So I have my alt text section up there and a little bit about disability and accessibility for marketing purposes. So I'm putting that together. I have a checklist that makes it really easy to go through your content before you post it. Like, did I do this and this? So that is available to download from my website. I've gotten a lot of people say that it's really helped them. It's helpful if you have interns that are newer to the marketing world and they want to learn about it in a really quick and easy way. But other than that, I'm just kind of talking to other marketing groups. I'm talking to more marketing programs this year at colleges and universities, which I'm really excited about because I know that me and my peers did not have this in our education or we didn't have it thoroughly. So I'm hoping to talk to the next generation of digital marketers before they hit the industry and get ahead of the unknowing by telling them about it while they're still in school.
Awesome. What's your Twitter handle, by the way?
It's hashtag Hey Alexa. So literally the word hashtag.
Yeah, spell it Hey out. Alexa. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So go follow her. Again, she's a fantastic follow for a lot of reasons. But if for nothing else, learn more about accessibility, open your mind a little bit more to it, and learn about things that are going on around you that maybe you didn't understand before or didn't even consider were happening, it's very important. I know that I'm going to be continuing to do so. Thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And we will talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to How I Built My Audience. If you found something noteworthy or interesting in this episode, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And hey, share it with a friend.